morning, everyone. I'd like to thank everyone for getting here earlier. There are some changes in our program, the parliamentary program, which is required that we got an earlier start than we expected. We do wish to welcome Deputy Minister, who has on a number of occasions joined us, and we really appreciate your active presence here, Deputy Minister Messina. Thank you very much. Of course, the department itself, led by, in this instance, Ms. Jodie Scholtz, Chief Group, Chief Operating Officer, and others. But to indicate that we do have apologies, Advocate Elbert will arrive late, the Honourable MacPherson will arrive late, and I'm not sure about the Honourable Shivambu because he's written in hand here. Does that mean he's late or will he not be? There will be to spell it out. He won't be attending the meeting. He has party business. Those are the only apologies I have. So I would like to ask staff to... I'm looking at Denver, yourself there, Mr. Willington, to contact Mr. Honourable Easterhaven and find out if he's attending his other committee, or is he simply let? Will you please do that? Right, he's attending another committee meeting, he sits from three. So it is that challenge that he faces. Nevertheless, we are going to make a start. In attendance, we have the National, I'm just looking here, the DTI. We've already welcomed the Deputy Minister and the Jodie Scholtz. We also have Advocate, is this Young? John. Right. John Simpson, a full-time tribunal worker. So you're with the company's National Companies Tribunal, are you? Consumer Tribunal. Then we have Ms. Hazel DeVros, is it? DEV. Debra. And that's from the French Huguenots. Then Mr. Ilibet Norberto, right, the IDT manager, Mr. Willy Strauss, the CFO, Mr. Forhart Lockett, is that right? Senior loss analyst, case analyst, right? Yeah, I must say, I thought mine was bad, but you certainly take the Olympic star. Mr. F. Renison, is it? Renison Moody, also a senior case analyst. That's your souls, all right. And then we'll come to the, we've also got to the company's tribunal. Is that right, Mr. Musk? Ms. Masumwane Yane, full-time member. Mrs. Matato, CFO. Right. Ms. Maputle, registry manager. And then for the now, we've done, of course, the consumer tribunal. But on that note, members, we do have a shortened agenda because we have to vacate this room within a few minutes after 11. So on that note, we took out the third quarter in many ways, didn't we, if we ran out of time. Were you informed of that, Ms. Holt? That we may run out of time for the third quarter. Right. So on this note then, can we please have the agenda adopted, proposed for adoption? Right, that's Honourable Williams, seconded by the Honourable McIntosh.
Chairperson?
Yes, Honourable Bill Lewis.
I would like to press on the record that I really object to the rescheduling of this meeting to cater for the ANC's internal caucus meeting. It's unprecedented and I don't think it's acceptable. This is an important meeting that we've asked for a long time. There's a lot of very important questions that we need to ask the NCT, but they need to come forth to this committee. I can't remember the last time that the NCT appeared before this committee, and we will now have a very truncated question time, so as some members of our committee can go to a caucus meeting. That's not the way that we usually do things, but nevertheless, if it needs to be, I would like to suggest that the NCT come back for a second engaged session so that we can have a proper time to question them.
Yes, you know, we would have preferred to have adopted the agenda first. Yes, but and to move on to the next thing. I thought you were trying to get objective adoption of the agenda. We haven't finished that process. The reality is the room was booked earlier and we found it difficult to obtain a short notice of another room, another venue. Secondly, this is not the first time we have changed our venue at short notice and also shifted a meeting to 8:30. In this term, I can remember being asked by rules. Rules is a multi-party committee. Generally, chairs like to work with other chairs to accommodate each other because when we've got a very large meeting, we do exactly the same thing and we engage with other chairs to see where we can swap venues. So I hardly consider this a precedent at all. Yes, Honourable Mpongi?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with the explanation, but we must put things to be clear here. It is not criminal for the ANC to have its own caucus. So if the ANC is going to have its own caucus, it is not wrong. It must not be inflated in this meeting. That because of we are going to have our own caucus, must apologize to the DA, it's wrong. The matter is that they are in these entities, and we agree that some of the entities must come there and present to Parliament. But we cannot at this stage insinuate that if the ANC must not have its own caucus.
Yes, now I think that is clear and the technicalities are now dealt with on the bed. And we're all sitting here. Thank you very much. Briefing on the strategic and annual performance plan of National Consumer Tribunal, as well as the third quarter financial and non-financial report. And we will be addressing the matter.
Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, good morning. Mr. Paul Gimbert, and I'll be addressing you on these issues. I just need to
so if we can make a start on yourself, thing.
I just need to note the apologies from our NCT chairperson, Mr. Andrew Lunch, who's been here today, and our CEO, due to personal circumstances, he could not be with us. So I'm a full-time tribunal member being mandated to deal with the issues addressing today. With your permission, I will go through the strategic plan and the ATP and the issues around the budget. And at the end, if we do have a few moments, I'd like to take you through the high-level issues around our cases, because I know this is an issue that's been addressed by Parliament. We are here on the 18th of May also to address you on our cases and the status of our cases. If we move on into the presentation, in terms of the NCT's mandate, our key mandate is to adjudicate an application and referrals in terms of the National Credit Act and the Consumer Protection Act. So those are the founding legislations that we deal with. The strategic goals and objectives. What's critical to the NCT as all one is to effectively and efficiently manage and adjudicate on matters brought to the tribunal. And we broke this up into what we call rearranged applications, which is the bulk of the filings that we receive at the NCT, and then non-debt rearrangement applications, which is our opposed matters and the bigger cases that come forward to the tribunal. So this is very in line with Section 142 of the National Credit Act, which talks around the cases being dealt with expeditiously. So that is how we've linked the strategic goal also to the mandate of the organization. The other issue around Goal 1 is also around decisions made by the tribunal and whether they are substantively and procedurally correct. And this deals with matters that have been taken on appeal or review and the outcome of such decisions. You will know that to date we've only been overturned in one matter from inception. The strategic goal number 2 deals with contributing to an efficient and effective consumer regulatory environment What is critical here for the NCT is really to ensure cooperation and partnership amongst our external stakeholders through ongoing engagement. And we've identified these stakeholders as the regulators and the filing parties that are before the tribunal. So really to engage with them, to inform them about the processes that we follow, because we feel that is an important step in our adjudication as well. Building capacity, these are new areas of law, so we've informed that we build capacity through research papers and approved briefing papers in terms of consumer protection and credit-related matters, and really about increasing the knowledge base within the organization as the IR knowledge institution. Strategic goal number three deals with effective and efficient organizational management, and the key areas are really around the support to the adjudication. And that is around the finances, ensuring that we manage our financial resources effectively, around our ICT enabling architecture, and how does ICT then support the core mandate, HR, to ensure that the NCT is adequately resourced, and then we focus then really around the operations in goal three. The core programs, we've put them into two categories, mainly the adjudication and the administration. The adjudication is ready to provide the administrative and adjudicator and other related services to ensure that we do effectively deliver on our legislative mandate. In terms of the administration, this is the strategic leadership to the tribunal to ensure that we have successful implementation of the legislative mandate, and that is really through our resourcing and our services provided internally. This slide really gives you an indication in terms of the alignment to the National Development Plan and how the NCT has taken cognizance of this and aligned ourselves to the NDP. We have focused around youth initiatives, which is through the employment of interns and a contingent pool of young people that assist us during our high-keeping cases. In terms of fighting corruption, we look at fair adjudication of cases, we deal with issues around conflict of interest and declarations, and ensuring we have the necessary sound governance structures in place, and deal with fraud management. Building capable and developmental state, this is around our access and provision of redress, and we've started doing this through a process of motion court and service courts that we've held previously, and we'll continue to do that going forward, to really increase accessibility. Ensuring active citizenry, that's through our ICT interventions and what we are putting in place in that regard, and it just overall impact on service delivery and the importance of that. The next slide goes into the detail of the alignment to the medium-term strategic framework, and we've set out how we intend dealing with outcome four and the various activities that the NCT will engage in to ensure that we can have alignment to the NTSF. And I'll touch on some of the issues here around the procurement, looking at local suppliers and the issues, and then around reducing the regulatory burden within the NCT. We have had some rule amendments, and one of the key things here was to simplify our forms in terms of the filing procedure, and also to ensure service by email by consent, agreed consent by the parties. And that has resulted in a reduced regulatory burden. So the amendments, that was the aim of the amendments. Again, around the interactions with the regulatory stakeholders, this is workshops with our key stakeholders, and also issuing practice notes where necessary to give guidance in terms of how we deal with matters before the tribunal. Internally, around workers' education, we look at training and development of NCT staff aligned to their PDTs. On the issue of collective bargaining forum, and we have interactions and engagements with staff. Employment opportunities that are dealt with, and around the youth development. So this gives you an overall focus in terms of our alignment to the MSTS. Alignment to the DPI, we've got that alignment more in terms of how we relate to creating a fair regulatory environment, and we've shown the link between all our strategic goals to support the objectives in terms of CCRD, which is the Consumer Corporate Regulation Division. To provide you with some of the high-level programs on the medication over the 3-year APP, you will see that we have put in timelines to have our on average to finalize our cases. So in terms of the debt rearrangement applications, we're looking at 75 days to finalize these matches on average. It was the same KPI that we had for the 2015-2016 financial year, which is 75 days. We have kept the same target. The reason being is I will explain later on the huge increase that we've had in our cases. And we see an objective in further increase, but we would like to keep these timelines and ensure that we adhere to them. On our non-DRA matters, you will see that we say not applicable because we've had a new calculation method. So here, previously, we want to finalize matters from close of pleadings, excluding performing matters, on 150 days. You will see that we've reduced that to 70 days. Because it is important that we deal with matters as quickly as possible. The next slide deals with the percentage of decisions overturned on appeal. As we hear more matters, there are more judgments being issued, so we have increased that to less than 5%. As I've indicated, from inception, we only be overturned on one matter, but there are other matters that we've been taken on appeal on, and the decision is still awaiting decisions on those. I'm not going to go into the detail of the Program 1 quarterly milestones, because this slide just talks about how we will ensure that we monitor performance against the KPIs on a quarterly basis. So this is just around performance monitoring, and it's the same information as explained earlier on Program 1. So I won't go into those details. I'll move on to Program 2 on the 3-year ACP, which deals with the administration. We foresee having structured engagement with external stakeholders. We've been quite specific in terms of the stakeholders that we would like to engage on, and we've put a number of engagements that we would like to hold. As stated previously, we've defined these stakeholders as the regulators, the National Trade Regulator, and the National Consumer Commission, as these are key funding parties to the tribunal, as well as parties that file with the tribunal, for example, registrars, accountants, etc. So those are the parties that we would like to engage on. So it's quite structured engagement that we would like to have so that we can really see an outcome in relation to this. The number of briefing papers, this is really to keep updates on latest legislative information and developments, and we're looking at 24 papers in the financial year. From an HR perspective, we're looking at percentage of positions filled, which really is to ensure that we adequately resource to fulfill our mandate, and our target is 85%. We do have a short staff complement at the moment in terms of the ACP, which reflects what we call common positions, and that is why we have left the percentage at 85, based on the fact that we have a small number of staff. On the ICT side, we've gone through a process in the previous years in terms of implementation of the CMS. And the key over the APT period is really to focus on the website interface, to assist parties to be able to get an update of where their cases are at any point in time. And that will then be the key activity for the next APT period. From a financial perspective, it's important in light of budget constraints that we really consider reliable budgeting and forecasting model that we can implement to ensure that we're always in line with our budget. From an HR perspective, the key is around youth employment, structured opportunities, and this is really through the appointment of interns. The next few slides deal with the quarterly milestones, and as I said, I'm not going to deal with the details here because it's really to show you how we will track performance over the quarters to ensure that we meet our target at the end of the financial year. So that then relates to our two key programs, Program 1 and Program 2, which is around adjudication and administration. I'm going to move on to the financial aspects over the APP period, and I'd really like to show you the cash flow projected as the APP period. So in 2015-2016, which is the current financial year, you will see that we have a projection of 70,172 cases. What is also important to bear in mind is that our cash flow is very unpredictable. We rarely see spikes in certain periods of time in our case filing. But what I would like to comment on is that this forecast that was done in last year actually came very close to reality, in the sense that we actually had approximately 17,000 158 matters that were filed in the 2015-16 year. So it's also to give you some confidence that in light of the unpredictability, we are able to predict more or less what we foresee going forward. So that's just the information that I wanted to share with you. In terms of the budget, you'll see we've got the grant allocation, and then we've got the additional grant donor funding. And you'll see that there's an additional amount that you would require over the 3-year period. Having said that, I'd like to address you on the issues that we are very cognizant of the budget constraints. And if you look at 2016-17, we show that we would need an additional funding of 1.6 million. However, there has been an increase in our filing fees for debt rearrangement matters, which is from 100 rand to 200 rand, which was effective in February of 2016. And in light of that, we would be able to then ensure we won't need that additional funding. So we will work around that. That will really assist us. Over the next 2 years from there, 2017-18 and 2018-19, you will see that we're looking at 4 million and 8 million. Once again, the tribunal has really ensured that we put different systems in place to maximize our levels of efficiency and deal with our higher cases. And what we could see implementing over the next 3 years to deal with the issues identified in the budget is to look at the decision support system, really ICT interventions that will help us deal with our cases and reduce our costs on that. For example, in this financial year, we introduced the motion court process. And what that has resulted in, it has resulted in a significant cost-saving initiative. So where we would deal with 8 matters in a day, which is debt rearrangements, we now have to deal with 32 matters in a day through the motion court process. And I will talk later on just about the high-level benefits of it. You know, that is then per tribunal member. So for 8 matters, you've got to 32.
Before you move on that way, who are the donors? I mean, we know the grants.
Yes, the donor funding, Honourable Chairperson, is going to be looking at by a national treasury to look at funding of the interns. So that will be talking about donor funding.
So it would be treasury?
It would be treasury.
Allocating it. Yes. I hardly call that a donation.
Honourable Chair, can I ask the CFO just to expand on that?
It has been an engagement with National Treasury, and it is donor funding that is made available by the United Nations for youth development, specifically for youth development. So we are looking at putting a proposal forward to get donor funding for our internship program and also the other youth that we have in our resource pool.
I know when you've had that form of funding before, and I know Ms. Schultz would know that as well, would actually specify that we haven't called it donor funding. You know, this broad concept of donor, we don't know who it is.
Right. Yes, sir. So the key points I want to make on this slide is while we recognize in light of the increase in cases that we need additional funding, we are looking at ways within the organization to ensure that we can fund the spaces that we've identified. Chair, with your permission, can I take you through some of the key issues around our cases? Yes. Okay. First, I'd like to recognize and thank the members of Parliament. We have seen the issues that have been raised regarding the status of cases of the NCT, and just to give you some indication of where we are. So thank you for those issues. We will be briefing on the 18th of May on all our cases, and especially the NCR matters as has been requested. So the question is, in light of the challenges that we face in the high case flow, just to put some perspective to it, we received a total of 9,589 cases in the 2014-15 year. In this financial year, we received, in the 2015-16 financial year, we received 17,178 matters. So you will see it's a 79% increase in our case flow. So the question is, what have we done as the NCT to address this high case flow? So we've implemented greater oversight. With full-time tribunal members, myself and Advocate Simpson, have been dealing with the DRA, the non-DRA issues from September 2015. So we've identified key challenges, and this is what has been put in place. There's been a motion court process. The concept was developed in August 2015 and implemented more effectively from November 2015. The benefit is that from November 2015 to March 2016, we have been able to finalize 8,898 non-FTE arrangement applications. The other benefit of the Welsh Court is that it allows greater accessibility in that we go to the provinces where the parties are, we adjudicate on the matters, and the parties receive their orders on the same day. It has also introduced cost savings and efficiencies, as I've stated before. Instead of 8 matters a day, we can now adjudicate on 32 matters per day. In terms of the approach matters and the bigger matters, we have in total 270 non-FTE arrangement matters. We have finalized this financial year approximately 82 matches, and we have 73 matches that are incomplete, which means that the violence requirements have not been met. During quarter 3 specifically, we held 37 hearings. What we've also done in areas of efficiency is to group hearings together so that we can do more matches on one day. We also have ensured that we have our hearings in different locations so that we can increase the number of matches that need to be heard. We are tracking our matters quite closely now to ensure when proceedings are closed, the matters are set down as soon as possible from that date. The tribunal also issued in quarter 3, 24 judgments and rulings. In quarter 4, we have issued set downs for 23 matters, and we've issued in quarter 4, 22 matters. So yes, we do recognize that we have a challenge in our caseload. We're also experiencing certain management issues which we're dealing with, and as I said, the chairperson has implemented greater overhead in these areas. And going forward, it's really about saying how do you move these cases forward as expeditiously as possible. So, Chair, I just want to give yourself, the Member of Parliament, did a high-level review, and as I said, we are here on the 18th of May to take you through the details of various matters that have been filed before the tribunal. So thank you very much.
Yes, thank you very much as well. That's really given us a broad overview there. I'm just getting the name again, as we're not that familiar with each other. It's Mrs. DeVry. Thank you very much. Now, this is the member from the National Consumer Tribunal giving us the overview. I know that you studied your strat plan. I also know that the research Ms. Madalani made couple of pages available to all members. So let's see by show of hands if Honourable Mantash, Honourable Hill Lewis, Honourable Mkongi, in that order.
Thank you, President. If the member consumer tribunal says they are expecting their rise in the cases they have to attend to, where in the budget are they catered for that increase?
Thank you. Honourable Hill Lewis.
Thank you very much. Can I just check, is the register part yet?
No, the register is not yet, sir. We've got the two senior case analysts here.
Well, can someone respond to those?
I will be able to respond
right.
to and Advocate Simpson.
All right. Go ahead then, Honourable
so
Lewis.
Before I ask my questions, I do think it's important to say that it's not ideal to not have a CEO, or the registrar here today. I appreciate the presentation you've given, but I would have preferred to have had the senior leadership of the SCT here. If I may go on to my questions then, I want to ask about the non-DRA related matters that you deal with. You said you've dealt with 230, I think it was, in this financial year. Is that right? Can you just check that? Yes, 230. And you say here that your performance is less than 78, which is less than what you're doing on the DRA-related matters. Now, I must admit I find that hard to believe, because there's a number of matters that I can list to you, all of which have been way, way longer than 70. In fact, some of them more than kind of 370 days. So I don't understand how you can say that your performance... I misread this. You said you're not applicable new calculation method, so you actually haven't reported back on the performance on that. So I don't understand why you're not able to give us the actual number of days that takes. I'd really like to know what the average is and explain that comment around a new calculation method, because my suspicion is that it's much, much more than 70 days, your performance on that. Then there's been a lot of rumors, let me say, about HR said that you only have 7 or 8 staff vacancies. So, you know, the stories that we've heard about a lot of recent resignations, a lot of those people have been recently appointed. Or are those exaggerated? And then the matter of dispute with the registrar. If I could ask why it was necessary, if you can give us the background on why it was necessary to do an internal audit report on the performance of the registrar, and what that report found, and whether any action, follow-up action was taken against the registrar for their performance, and what the consequences were. I'll leave it there for the first round. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Hill Lewis. Honourable Mkongi.
Thank you very much, President. Let's just welcome first the presentation from the tribunal. I have some several questions. The first one relates to the depletion of funding. What are your proposed funding models that are going to follow? Other than the, you said, I'm like the chairperson, I'm sensitive of the donor funding for state departments. Other than that one, what other funding windows are you looking at to mitigate your funding crisis or challenges? You are talking about funding challenges, but at the same time, you are proposing an additional member of the tribunal. Where in the budget is that going to come from? And what are the actual strategic responsibilities of the state administration that is going to put into the tribunal, given that you are facing funding challenges? You have been, in most of your slides, I'm very passionate about youth development. In most of your slides, you spoke about youth development. What are the content of this youth development program? Because if you analyze, I'm not sure what you did to make that research, because you said, in terms of research, you have increased your research capacity and the graduates. Do you research about the ages of these people that you are dealing with, that you are helping, these consumers? What is their age? Are they between the ages of 30 and 35? Are they between the ages of 36 and 40? Or between 50 and 60? Where are they? And if it is the youth, that is the majority. What is the strategy of youth development? We have what we call in South Africa the National Youth Service Program. But we have that program of the National Youth Service Program, which is going to educate consumers, you know, about internetness and so forth and so on. So this is what I just want to know. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mkongi. Yes, you spoke about being able to, in this new methodology, being able to increase the number of cases that you handle. But it would appear as if the budget has gone down, the allocation, or your own allocation to it. Perhaps you could explain how you intend funding that, you know, the increase in cases. The other issue is, apart from the number of cases and so on, there's a certain increased uptake. For example, you speak about the expansion in mandate emanating from the National Press Amendment Act. An additional 6 part-time, 1 full-time member, every chair will be required during a performance period. Is this correct? Perhaps clarification there, first of all, and then an explanation into how you will increase the complement of the tribunal to 20. So many full-time, so many part-time, etc. How are you going to fund this, please? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and members. There's a lot of financial questions, and I'll ask the CFO to expand on them, but I will offer you initial explanation, and then I will ask the CFO to expand. In terms of the expected rise in the cases where the budget raise is indicated, so you'll see that our adjudication cost, we've got, over the 2016-17 period, we've got
right, is the CFO, Willem Stas. So on the expected rise in the cases, where will this budget come from? I'll ask the CFO to address you, and I will then add any additional information.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Can I just request that we put the side with the budget on the...
It's the right person, otherwise I won't be able to. Are you able? Well, there we are. Just give me a copy of your share. Right? Sounded like such a novelty, I wondered.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You will see that goods and services, we account for our part-time tribunal members. The fees that we pay for our part-time tribunal members are accounted for under goods and services. You will see that there's a decrease from our forecast for 2015-16 at the time that the budget was done for the APP to the 2016-17 budget from 23.6 million to 21.6 million. Now, the decrease there has two components. One is that we have budgeted to appoint an additional full-time tribunal member. So the time that that member would have spent as a part-time member under goods and services will then move up to the compensation of employees line. So that was one move. Then the other move there is anticipated efficiencies that we will gain through our ICT interventions and motion costs and so on that will actually bring the actual adjudication costs down per case. But due to the increase in case numbers that we anticipate, there's still a growth in the total cost. So that is how it seems that the adjudication cost is coming down. But since then, DPI has indicated to us that they are not going to have us appoint another full-time member. So in future, when we redo the budget, that position will basically move back into goods and services because the time that the person will spend working full-time getting paid salary and the time that the person will spend working part-time adjudicating on cases will just shift from the one cost item to the other one. So, Madam Chair, that is how we address that. Then as to the different funding models, what we are looking at is to increase the efficiencies through the case management system so that because there's a time aspect for tribunal members to adjudicate on cases that they get paid for. So through our ICT interventions and as was referred to the decision support system, we will reduce the time that tribunal members will have to spend specifically on the debt rearrangement matters for them to be able to finalize an order. And those time savings will result into cost savings. And if they can do more matters per day as we improve our ICT systems and support in the ICT systems, the decision support as we call it. So that is then the major model that we are looking at to constantly increase the number of cases that can be done by a tribunal member per day so that we can then contain the adjudication costs. As to where the money is going to come from, we did submit over the last 2-3 years motivation for additional funding to National Treasury.
If I can just expand on what has been provided by the CFO. So then in terms of the expected rise in the cases, we have identified what the decreases are, and as I explained, we do have initiatives in place to overcome those. And the key is our ICT interventions, the motion court, and the grouping of our cases. So those are the three key issues we will look at around dealing with the budget. The questions then around the non-DRA matters. The 75 days is what is the, or the 70 days rather, is what we look at in terms of going forward on the 2016-17 over the next 3 years. In quarter three, we had our average, we needed to look at the 150 days in which to finalize matters. You did pose a question in terms of what is the change in terms of the calculation. In the 2015-16 financial year, we calculated from the close of hearing to the date that the judgment was issued. And what is different now, we will also look at close of hearing, but we will include matters carried forward from the previous financial year, which we didn't do in our last calculation, and where there's been postponement, we will also include those, but we will just exclude the time period for the postponement request. And yes, your statement is correct on the issues around the time periods for cases. We have set out for discussion on 18th of May all the timelines around each and every case in the turnaround terms. And we've also set out how we explain what has caused the delays, where it's been on the MCT side, and yet we've identified issues where we have caused the delay in the cases and what we have done about it. Or there's been cases around the parties come and request a response and that also causes some of the delays. So I think that requires a more detailed discussion and engagement, but I do agree with you and I accept that yes, from the time that a matter is filed to the time that it is finalized, there have been huge delays in some of the cases, which I think we would be able to have a more fruitful engagement with you for cases that we would put forward to you and cases that you may have identified specifically for us to rescue on. But I do accept that. The rumors around the HR problems, I'll ask the CFO to also act in CEO for a period of time, just to take you through some of the resignations. Our recent resignation has been from the HR manager, who resigned a few months ago, so that's the resignation that we had. The dispute with the register, the internal audit report, just to give you some background to this, is this came out of the performance information that was submitted for the register and to senior officials within the register unit for their performance information, that's the performance information. The HR governance committee, in reviewing the performance assessments, there were certain disputes based around the assessment and the performance information to support that assessment. The chairperson then requested an internal audit to be done, and we are now in the process of conducting an external review. The results of that have not been finalized as yet. We do project to have that finalized by May. So that is the process in terms of the register, and where we are on those issues. So the outcomes of that investigation and external review we don't have as yet. The question on the depletion of funds, the CFO has addressed what is the proposed funding model, but before I go on to that, I think just on the resignations, maybe Mr. Trotsky can just talk on those issues first before we move on to the next question.
As for the staff complement of the NCT, at the end of December 2015, the end of the third quarter, we had 41 positions on our staff structure, of which 6 positions were vacant at that point in time, and our vacancy rate was about 30% at that stage. Subsequent to December in the fourth quarter, as Ms. Defras has mentioned, the HR manager has resigned in January, and we are currently busy filling that position again, and that is the only position I can, you know, on the extra level. The other positions that are vacant are on lower levels of staff. It's only one extra level.
Just a minute. Yes, thank you. Can we go on?
Question 3, that related to depletion of funds, what proposed funding models are there? The CFO has dealt with that. Download funding, we have clarified that. Then in terms of the additional member, so what are the key responsibilities? The key responsibilities of full-time tribunal members ready to adjudicate on cases, and that will be their key role and function. So with the increased number of cases, you would have some dedicated that will adjudicate, as opposed to having some part-time who comes in and out for a hearing. the question around the youth development, what is the context of this? This is really, it doesn't deal with the research. It deals with the internship program that the tribunal has in place. And there we appoint youth. We take them through a structured internship training as well as hands-on experience that they obtain in position. And it is for a specific period of a year. We have within the tribunal also where the vacancies arose in junior positions, been able to fill them through people that have come through the internship program. And the other aspect is around youth development is when we have, because our cases peak at certain times, then we bring in a contingent pool that assists during those high peak times. The research that we focus on is really around the cases and case law. For example, there's a research paper in terms of inquisitorial powers and how far can the tribunal go in terms of those powers. So it's really, really specific and related to cases before the tribunal. It doesn't refer into the youth issues. Question number five, the budget has gone down, the CFO has addressed that. Additional members required, how will this increase the staff complement and how will it be funded? As the full-time tribunal member on board, that we've already looked at that funding within the compensation of employees budget. So those were then the key questions. And
just the one question I just want to answer, Chairman Parks, you asked in terms of the extra members, how we fund this. Yeah, obviously the extra members are part-time. So they're not paid on an ongoing basis. So they're only paid when they come in. So whether you have 20 part-time members or 100, the cost is the same. It's just the availability or availability of members increases, not your cost as such. It's just availability that increases.
Essentially, you've worked out that you need so many hours.
Yes.
But you've got a pool of 100.
Exactly. So
thank you very much. Now, we're going to be closing this, but I saw a hand at the back, and that is, is it a follow-up, Honourable Kofi? And then I'll take Honourable Colonel, and this is a follow-up, Honourable Hilders. Is it a follow-up or a new question? Right, after Honourable Colonel, and yourself, Honourable Esther Hayson.
I'm just a little bit confused, maybe they want to help me. Is it an accounting principle that you are putting part-time as you're accounting for them under goods and services, not under the compensation of employees? Is it an accounting principle? Or is what you have decided to do? You know, is it correct in terms of the accountability? You know, I just want to be clear about this. You know, what it is a principle. The second one is the issue of the success rate. So you are saying that you are going to cut on education, but what has been the success rate in terms of that, of the education process? What has been the success rate? Were the cases solved, or the people did not agree? You know, what were your success rate in terms of resolutions?
Thank you, Honourable Mkongi. Honourable Colonel.
Thank you, Chairperson. It will be short. If I look at goods and services, I see obviously it's going down in 2016-17, you know, because of saving measures. But then it goes up steeply again in 17-18 and 18 and 19. So I just want to know, why have you taken that into account that you should save in other years as well? It doesn't appear like that. And the jump between 14, 15 to 15, 16 is high. You know, it's almost 5 million. Why is it so high?
Thank you very much, Honourable Colonel. Honourable Hill-Lewis.
Just before I ask a question of clarity, just a quick question of clarity. The 75 days that you referred to, are those business days or calendar days? If I can just have a quick answer on that before I ask. Business days, okay.
On the record, yes.
I apologize, business days. All right, so it's very close to about 5 months in terms of calendar days. So, you know, my concern again, and this is not your fault, but we haven't had time to go into the detail of your annual report. We've had about 45 minutes now to interact with you, and it's really not ideal and not sufficient. But if you could give me a straightforward answer on the average number of days that you've
Thank you, Chair. And my apologies for coming late. A bad flu, and I smoked my brain so much with tablets and things. I didn't see an email that energy is tomorrow, actually, not today. I apologize.
And I hope those tablets are worn off.
Well, I still feel like a herd of elephants, then, you know. Chairperson, I see on the budget, seeing that the CAPEX, the forecast for CAPEX has actually gone down. And it's mandated, the NCC is mandated extended by the National Credit Amendment Act. So does it mean now that they're going to refer more cases, or do they think of referring more cases to the courts? Then, what actually, can a person approach the NCC and the civil courts at the same time? What would the case be in it? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Minister. There are a number of questions which we will put in writing to you, and they concern the grant funding and related information on that. It also concerns the applications that Honourable Bongani is moving and the mitigation thereof and others we're looking at, and the funding model's complete explanation. But as you are coming back on the 18th of May, I'm going to be putting forward these four questions to you and anything else that may arise this morning. But please respond to what has been raised here at the meeting other than what I've raised.
Yeah, I'm going to ask the CFO to deal question one, which relates to the accounting principle on goods and service, and whether this is the correct procedure to have it under.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. It is an accounting principle in the sense that on the employee cost, we only account there for employees where there's employer-employee relationship, and that we also report the National Treasury as part of, while the fees paid to tribunal members are for the for hours that we buy from them, and there's no employee-employer relationship with tribunal members. They get appointed by the state president, and they report directly to the executive chairperson as to their education.
Chair, on the question on the success rate of the adjudication, being a tribunal, we can only issue a judgment, which is our ruling, and then it will be, and if the parties don't agree with that, they can take us on review and appeal to the High Court. So as I stated before, from time of inception of the NCT, we've only been overturned on one member. So our success rate would be quite good then in that respect. The next question.
I just want to add one aspect as well with the debt rearrangement applications. In terms of people applying for an order placing them under debt review, I can basically, there's a 99% success rate for those cases. So where they're applying to be placed under debt review, all the application documents are in order, we grant that order in 99% of the cases.
Do you want to complete the response? Yes, Chair. With regard to business services, I think we've dealt with it. We can only introduce efficiencies to a certain extent because we recognize the way our cases are increasing. So that is why you would see that our percentage increases over the next coming years, because we can introduce efficiencies, but as I said, we will have to see how it gets implemented. So the CFO, I don't think you want to expand further on that in terms of explaining why goods and services are so cheap in the two sectors.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. First of all, there was a question about the jump from 2014-15 to 2015-16. Thank you, Honourable Chair. The goods and services from 2014-15 to 2015-16, the huge jump there, is as a result of the increase in our caseload And also at that stage, we haven't introduced these efficiencies in our case management system as we are now currently putting in place. So those costs basically came through on the old cost model, if I can call it like that. Then the decrease, as I mentioned earlier, was that we budgeted to get a full-time member on board that will reduce the number of hours that part-time members have to be available, which then had a reduced effect there, as well as the decision support system that will reduce the adjudication cost. And as Ms. Deirdre has mentioned, in the next year that efficiency would have been worked out in the 2016-17 year, and from there on we will have to come up with something new to again have a cost reduction. If I can just add on to that question regarding the capital expenditure, that is also what you will see in 2016-17, there's a sharp increase in the capex. But most of these ICT interventions will happen under our software side and also on the development side. And that is either coming through with staff on compensation of employees or where we have programmers on board as part of goods and services.
Chair, the next question deals with the issue of efficiency around the cases. We've clarified the 75 days related business days, but that is for going forward. In the 2015-2016, we had to finalize cases within an average 150 days on our non-DRAs. I'm just looking for that figure in terms of what we reported on the quarterly. If I can find it now, we will then provide you with a written response on that by tomorrow. However, what I'd just like to highlight is that we calculate from close of pleading, so that's when all cases have come in, to the date of issuing the judgment. So that is our calculation. We exclude postponements because it's very difficult to track if we keep having postponements. We have had a high number of postponements where we let down matters on a default basis, and then after hearing the parties approach them, they want to postpone and they ask for condemnation for the late filing. And I think all the details will be very important to share with you on the 18th of May, with all the details on each case. So I think when we hear them, we can tell you on each case, this is the average calculation on the basis. So I think that's what we commit to. The challenges on the register, we have paid out the performance bonus, the executive chief, the CEO, and the COO. But we haven't paid the performance bonuses for the register and the two senior, one senior case analyst and one record, senior records officer, because that performance information is in dispute. You asked about the amount that was paid out. If the CFO does not have the figures with him now, then we'll also give you that information by tomorrow, because it would be readily available. So I'm going to just have hand over to the CFO to indicate if you have those figures.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. If I can just request the specific positions again that the bonuses were paid for.
I'm going to ask you to put the issue around bonuses in writing to us, please, because I do want us to get clearer understanding of this. So I'm going to ask that this is done by Thursday the 7th of April, that week, not to wait till the 18th, eve of the specific issues related to the budget. All right? And we are cognizant, and we noted this in our own report, that you have been requesting additional funds. But our decision was in line with the constraints of the budget for this case, as you know.
Okay.
So I'm going to send several, and I've got the four questions coming, Ms. Honourable Hilders.
Just to clarify, I was asking about the CEO, COO, and the registrar.
I want those, and the full clarification, I think, did you ask for their mandate in relation as well to the bonuses and wages? Just let's get it on record here.
I just asked for what the quantum was of those bonuses in each case, and then a question around the actual number of days.
So that is quite clear, because we've already heard a full-time, part-time, hourly paid, etc. information to reach us by the 7th of April. But the other information in relation to cases, etc., is still there for the 18th of May. Is that clear? Thank you very much to the team. And it would have been quite constructive to have had the registrar with us, if possible, next time. And I think when we get these cases, we may wish to indicate, Mr. Medina, which people specifically should be here, so that we don't miss out. All right. Thank you very much. Just while the company's tribunal is coming in, I just need to nip out for a minute. I will return while company's tribunal is taking over.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, good morning. On behalf of the Chairperson of the Company's Tribunal, Advocate Simi Lebala, Senior Counsel, is unfortunately not able to attend the meeting. He is in court today. He is dealing with a matter regarding ESCOM and other matters relating to Parawal, and therefore he could not be able to attend. He's tendered his apology. I'm Agnes Lema Saloyani, and with me is the on my right is the Chief Financial Officer, Ms. Irene Komatacho, and behind me is the Registrar, Mrs. Tabukho Bukuti. In terms of the presentation today, in terms of our strategic planning process, if we look at the process, we go through our mandate, which is derived from the company's act, and we also consider as part of our strategic planning process, we consider our vision, our mandate, our vision, our mission, and our values also. And that informs our strategic goals and our objectives, which I'll talk to later on. And we also make sure that our objectives align to the Department of Trade and Industry's objectives. Out of that, we develop our output and also the target for the financial years during the strategic plan. And also we develop the milestones, which we do on a quarterly basis, and those assist us in order to measure our performance. I'll move to the next slide, which is our mandate, as I have alluded to. In terms of our mandate, as a company's tribunal, we adjudicate applications that we receive in terms of the Companies Act. And the types of applications that we receive in terms of the Companies Act vary, and they deal, among others, with applications for exemptions from establishing a social and ethics committee. There are also applications that deal with directorship disputes. There are applications that deal with name disputes. Those are the types of applications that we adjudicate over as a company's tribunal. And then there is, in terms of our mandate, also to assist in the resolution of disputes in terms of the Companies Act. That functions pertain to our mandate to do mediation, conciliation, and arbitration, which is a form of a voluntary dispute resolution mechanism. And in terms of this mandate, we've been able to deal with cases that deal with directorship disputes and also in cases dealing with shareholding disputes. And also to perform any other functions that may be assigned in terms of the Act, in terms of those laws that I mentioned in Schedule 4. Our vision is that we would like to be a world-class regulatory adjudication and dispute resolution organization that contributes to the promotion of fair and ethical business practices, as I indicated, in order to ensure, for example, if you are granting or not granting an exemption for social and ethics concerns, basically the key there to consider is whether it is ethical, because is it in the public interest for this entity or company to establish a social and ethics committee. So it's the company strategy that is formed in order to ensure that business is conducted in a more ethical way. In the next slide, in terms of our strategic objectives, we've got two programs, and those programs is the adjudication program and the administration program. And in terms of the adjudication program, we've got two strategic objectives, and we want to make sure that we adjudicate our application timely, fairly, and in a transparent manner. And the reason for this is we want to make sure that as an alternative, which I'll call an alternative dispute resolution body, that our adjudication of cases is speedy, you know, as opposed to people having to go to court, where we know that the formality of it makes the process a little bit longer than it is with the company's tribunal. And therefore, our intention is to make sure that we adjudicate speedily and effectively. And the same goes with the resolution of disputes. When we do a mediation, conciliation, and arbitration, we want to make sure that we resolve those disputes cost-effectively, informally, and in a timely manner. When you deal with issues of mediation and arbitration or conciliation, the fact that it's informal, and therefore it allows the parties themselves to come to a resolution of the matter, and therefore it allows for a better administration of a redress mechanism or justice between the parties. We also do not charge for the services that we provide, and therefore it is costly effective for the parties to use the services of the company's tribunal. In terms of the administration program, we want to make sure that we promote sound corporate governance by having the correct governance framework, policies, and structures in place, and also to make sure that in the management of our cases, that the efficiency in the management of our cases, using a technology to do so, and also making sure that we've got the right policies and procedures in place, and that members of the public are made aware of those procedures, so that when we adjudicate cases, we do so in an efficient manner. Also, we've got a research division within the company's tribunal in order to build a body of knowledge around company law, to compare ourselves with similar entities around the globe, and therefore to make sure that we continuously improve our practices and the way that we are doing things, and also to look at a development around the law that may impact on some of the decisions that the company tribunal renders. And one of the other objectives of the company tribunal is to make sure that we recruit, appoint, and develop and retain competent staff. And this is critical given the human resource limitations that the company's tribunal is having, that we have competent staff, but also that we are able to retain our staff. And the last strategic objective is around educating the members of the public and raise awareness regarding the tribunal. We have done so in the previous financial year. We have been able to go to a number of places around the country, such as Kwani and Limpopo, Soweto, Ekurhuleni, East London, and Devon and Kimberley, raising awareness so that the public are able to know that there is a service that they can access from the company's tribunal. And that will enable us to achieve our mandate. In terms of an intellectual overview, basically, it's, you know, what are some of the things that informed our strategy as we were crafting this strategy? in terms of the things that informs us is that we are envisaging that there will be a going forward, that there will be energies in case in case mode. This is based on the fact that we are strengthening our partnership going forward with the cause and also with the BBBE Commission, and therefore we're expecting that there will be some of the cases that will be referred to the company tribunal, particularly around AGR or alternative dispute resolution, for us to deal with challenges that are facing companies in terms of directorship disputes or shareholding disputes. But also because of we will be increasing our awareness going forward, because we know that there's a need to further increase awareness and our accessibility regarding the services of the tribunal. And the different ways that we increase our accessibility is we are going to be using the technology in terms of websites, how people can access the tribunal services through the website. But also when we do adjudicate some of the cases, we go to the places, especially around AGR and so on. We go to the places that the parties are located to make sure that we are accessible. And therefore, we reduce the burden of doing this for those who have lodged cases with us. We also want to make sure, you know, we take into account that there's a need for continuous improvement of our regulatory environment, the Act in particular, to cover some of the gaps to make sure that the companies shall now become more effective in doing its work. And then one of the areas that we are looking at is in terms of the alternative dispute resolution, to make sure that we make the instead of it being voluntary, that we must consider making alternative dispute resolution compulsory in a similar manner as, or slightly different, more similar to the CCMA environment. Because what you find is that when an applicant has lodged a complaint in terms of AGR, that the respondent does not feel obliged to come before the tribunal in terms of AGR because it is voluntary. So we want to address that in order to make sure that the mechanism becomes an effective a way of resolving disputes. In terms of our human resources, we have a limited human resource constraint. If you look at our senior management level, we have a 50% vacancy. We are not in a position to fill their vacancies due to financial constraints. And therefore, we would be continuously looking at ways of improving our efficiency and delivering the things that we are intending to render to the people of South Africa. As I've indicated, there is a limited revenue at this stage. We work within a tight fiscal constraints. We are anticipating some budget deficit going forward, but we will be engaging with the Department of Trade and Industry to deal with it. Currently, the way we are dealing with the deficit is that we are using the surplus that was accumulated when the tribunal started, when it had no self complements, but we know that we cannot continue to do so going forward. In fact, we are not, that is why we are even incurring a deficit, because we are using the funds that have been allocated to us. In terms of the hearing rooms and space, there are challenges. We do not have a budget for accommodation, but we are using the department's accommodation, and therefore the hearing room. We need a few hearing rooms, especially when you do alternative dispute resolution. You need a number of rooms because of the methodology that is involved in conducting AGR. You do not use one single venue as such. There's a practice around how you do AGR. In terms of just an overview of our strategic drivers and our strategic enablers, is that, you know, this strategy focuses on performance. It's focused on ensuring that we deliver services to the people of South Africa. And therefore, we intend to meet the expectations of our customers and our stakeholders to make sure that the services that we provide meet those expectations. They are speedy, effective, and cost-efficient. And also want to make sure that those services, as we deliver them, that they are, you know, they have indicated cost-effective, so there's a need for operational efficiency, given also the time fiscal constraint we operate in. what enables us to therefore be able to provide those services which, and to become efficient is our mandate, is our assets, I've alluded to the mandate, is the company has, is our vision and also the strategy. Also, that is our strategic enabler, the governance structure that we have in terms of the governance structures. We've got the Wage and Risk Committee, we've got the Human Resource and Remuneration Committee, and this is a comprise of independent people just to oversee and ensure that there is good governance within the organization. And the other committee, which is in terms of the HR legislation, is your training committee, making sure that the staff that we have is able to keep on with development and therefore to skill themselves or refill themselves should they need require. And therefore the other enablers is the people that we have both in terms of the tribunal members and in terms of the staff. That is critical to ensure that we're able to achieve our strategy. The other enabler is the budget, although as we indicated that the budget is limited in terms of our requirements. The other enabler is to make sure that we have the right information technology that enable us to efficiently handle our cases. And lastly, it's in terms of monitoring our performance, you know, and evaluating our performance to ensure that there is continuous improvement in the manner in which we deliver our services. So, in terms of the next slide, this is our performance targets for the year moving forward. In terms of the adjudication program, our strategic goal is to adjudicate and make orders in relation to the applications that we are receiving. And therefore, the performance indicator is that we made ourselves in terms of the percentage of the decisions and orders that we issued within 30 working days after the date of the final hearing. The current estimated baseline is 55%, and the target for the new financial year is 90%. And in terms of the decisions relating to the allocations of decisions, the current estimated baseline is 90%, and the target is also 90%. As you can see, we are not increasing our target because we think that we have stretched ourselves too much in relation to this target, and therefore we would not be in a position to attain any increase beyond the 90%, especially given the resource constraints that we have in. In terms of mediation, conciliation and arbitration, because of the nature of those cases, we will be able to stretch ourselves in terms of the target from 70% to 75%. In terms of our budget, we will be able, because now we have a staff that now actually in terms of the mandate of the organization and what we have set ourselves to do, we are anticipating that we will spend more on our budget. We will not be giving instances of saving. And also we want to make sure that there are no frivolous, irregular, wasteful expenditure in the organization, and that is something that we also monitor ourselves against. And also that, as I've indicated, in order to ensure that there is, the efficient case management, we want to introduce an electronic case management system. The estimated baseline for this previous financial year was to have a draft case management business process maybe in place. And going forward, we are hoping that by year end, we would have piloted the system and implemented it partially. One of also of our output is the production of research reports, and we have produced a research report. It's just a comparative analysis of similar institutions that have a mandate similar to the company tribunal in terms of how they are handling issues, in terms of their policies, their procedures, just to inform ourselves of how we also can improve as an organization going forward. We are anticipating to also produce one research report where we will be measuring our effectiveness and our impact in terms of delivering on the mandate. We are also looking, because of the size of the organization, it's become necessary to look at the issue of staff training and multi-skilling. And therefore, although in the previous financial year we had not set an output, but we were doing it, we had not set an output around that. We feel that it is something that is necessary to monitor to ensure that we achieve our performance and we deliver the service. And therefore, our target is that we need to train 80% of our staff on matters relating to the company's tribunal. Also, what is key, especially in a small organization, is to retain the people that we have, because there is, you know, a cost in terms of time to train new people that comes into the organization. So we are aiming to retain 80% of the current staff that we have. The complement of the staff tribunal currently we sit at 50 people against a staff establishment of 28 posts. In the next slide, we, in terms of the advocacy services, what we have, we are intending to do is to host a seminar. We have hosted a seminar also in the previous financial year on ADR. It was attended by about 200 or so more people, and the number of lessons that we have learned from those, and also the awareness that we have raised with regards to the company tribunal providing alternative dispute resolution. So in the coming year, we are going to host a seminar around corporate governance, business ethics, and social and ethics committee. In terms of media engagement, that is intended also to raise the profile of the organization, will continue to issue media releases or media statements and also to participate in radio interviews as a way of reaching out to the people across the country. And the other way we are increasing the reach of the company's tribunal is participating in outreach programs or exhibitions, and we intend going forward to participate in areas such as Symphony, Bloemfontein, Port Elizabeth, Port Shepstone, Mohammedi, Malaki, Richards Bay, and Mafiki. There are strategies that also support this strategic framework or the strategy of the organizations, and those, briefly speaking, are the human resource strategy to make sure that we have a productive team, we have a highly competent and effective staff. There is an information technology strategy, we've got a communication strategy, we've got an anti-fraud and corruption policy, and then asset management and a service delivery improvement plan to ensure that year on year there is continuous improvement of our services. If you look at the service delivery improvement plan, in terms of the adjudication of cases, we would like to ensure that after the resolution of that we resolve cases within 35 days after there's a completion of the filing of documents, as it is the requirement of the Act that there is a certain timeline that we have to give for the filing of documents to be completed. So once that prescribed time frame elapses, we are hoping to resolve those cases within 35 days. And in terms of the quantum of cases that we will be resolving is to resolve 15 applications within 28 business days. We would also want to make sure that we, in terms of handling of our inquiries, that we handle or resolve those inquiries within 4 working days. In terms of ADR, that is dispute resolution, we would like to resolve those applications within 25 days from the date of receipt of the application. That takes into account if the parties need some form of postponement. So, although our resolution of this case is much easier. In terms of payment of service providers, we are paying faster than the 30-day time that was in the current standard. We would like to pay within 25 days going forward. There are some of the strategic risks of the, I will just mention them in terms of just an overview. It's about in terms of performance, there is performance risk, there is reputational risk, there is human capital risk, and there is a performance risk and a compliance risk. Some of the things we need to mention in terms of reputational risk around the failed ADR is that we would like to make sure that when parties get involved in alternative resolution, that we are able to assist. And therefore, as I indicated, because of the voluntary nature of the mechanism, some of the matters do not come to the table, and therefore we have what is regarded as a failed mediation. And we feel that we need to tweak a little bit the framework, the legislative framework, in order to make sure that we do not encounter this type of situation. I will not in detail go into the strategic risk because they are indicated there. I will then hand over to the CFO to deal with the questions related to the finances, the budget.
Finances, I think after we've raised certain questions, all right, to make sure we deal with this effectively. And that would be, it would have been Mashal Loyan Yani. Maybe we're going to refer you to Ms. Matatu. Let's see how we go with the time. All right. So just in this area, members that you've had, let us engage on the matter itself. I wanted to just ask an initial question, which I'd like you to respond to, and then we'll take the members' questions. Do you charge for services? Because I didn't think you did. Could you just tell us that, share that?
Thank you, Chairperson. Do not charge for our services. Our services are free.
Over to you. Honourable Bongani and Kungi, Honourable Kuanoff, Honourable Hill Lewis, Honourable Kalaku, right.
Thank you very much, President. I just want to work on this. Firstly, a question of the strategic nature, and I think maybe it will have a call for DTR to respond. In that, I compared two presentations. The one of the company's tribunal and the consumer tribunal. The flow is not the same. I'm not sure whether it's a policy matter or is what. For example, if you go to the consumer tribunal, they compared their strategies, one, to the NDP, two, to the medium-term strategic framework, three, to the DTI. And this one is only compared itself to DTI. I'm not sure whether it's a policy issue or not, it's just of strategic interest with the way. Yeah, the first question, Mr. President, is you spoke of the cases, what I'm interested, how many cases of transformation nature, disputes of transformation nature, did you receive? Not of technical nature, but of transformation. Where you find that people were put there for funding purposes, but now they are rebelling against the intolerance of others. Now they are bringing to you disputes of transformation nature. So how many disputes of transformation nature do you have? The second one is that you spoke about the increase in the cases or in the load. But in your budget, I don't see that. Can you show me? Maybe it's because of the CFO is not yet recorded, but I read it. Where did you budget for this increase? And how much is that budget? And you know what? I'm busy now dealing with the public finance management studies. One of the fundamental issues in looking at driving the financial of government is the question of the IT. You know, is your IT in scratch? Is it up to date with the issues? I mean, that's it. Because companies are changing and IT is also changing. And then it's leaving government behind. Are we on top of it in terms of the IT?
Thank you very much, Honorable Mkongi. I think it was Honourable Kroenhoff who was followed, but there's just something I noted here that I'm not sure if the Honourable Kalaka raised in my absence or not, but I was concerned that the chairperson was not here, although you did indicate, or he indicated, that there was an apology, wasn't there, due to him presiding. Wasn't this the case? Yes.
He's in court, yes.
Right. And clearly we do understand calls on his time. However, it is important that we engage with him on a number of issues. So I do want to indicate now
that notwithstanding this engagement, we would like him to come to the committee so we can take the engagement further with him. And we will liaise with the parliamentary liaison officer. I think that's in all, isn't it, Honourable Clarko? I discussed this with yourself. Right, Honourable Colonel.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, in the interest of time, they can probably respond to mine in writing. I just want to know how many full-time tribunal members do you have and how many non-full-time members? Secondly, what are the salaries per annum addressed to the specific full-time and non-full-time tribunal members? And also, I know the chairperson is getting, you know, not necessarily a fixed one, but clearly I want to see what was his payments for the last financial year.
Thank you so much. Honourable Colonel, Honourable Hill-Lewis.
Yes, to follow on to that question, I'd like a breakdown of what the chairperson earns and also the number of hours that he works, because he claims on a time basis. And then also, do we still allow him to charge for when he drives to and from the office? Because that was the case in the last financial year that resulted in some pretty extraordinary claims. So I'd like to know whether we've changed our policy, whether you've changed your policy around that. And if you could also just give us a breakdown of any performance bonuses that were paid to any of your staff members and what those were, and what the basis for those performance bonuses were, what the performance data was. Thank you.
Yes, I think this just called for the remuneration policy, including bonuses. You must have a policy in that regard, pertaining not only to ordinary members, but members of the executive as well. And I think that will cover the broader aspects there, but not cover the present government. They would have called it S&T when, but I don't know what they're calling it these days, AA when it's S&T, whatever it is, in terms of mileage or transport charges. It would be useful to know if staff get paid for transport, because in some cases they do quite separate to their remuneration at the time they're sending. So to have clear indication, is the transport time, and is there a transport fee such as an AA rate or whatever? And then when does the remuneration effectively start? Does it start at the time of the meeting or what? I think that's partly. And perhaps Honourable Hill-Lewis will get some response now, but the balance of it in writing. Is that all right then? I think that's the way we'll move with it. Huh? Honourable Kamaku, was your hand up? I'm sure it wasn't in Honourable Mantas.
Thank you, sir. Have you considered charging for the services you are providing? Because you, as you stated here, you depend on the grant funding from the TDI. As you listed here, your outreach and areas you visited, have you made an assessment of the impact of these programs? Or is it, as you also reflected, the uptake of your services, is that as a result of your outreach program, people becoming aware of the existence of the companies to be done. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Honourable Esther Hazen, is that the last term then? Thanks.
Thank you, the tribunal has the power to impose fines for up to 10% of the company's turnover. But that will obviously different from company to company, the percentage. Is there a maximum money value that is set by the tribunal? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Yester Hicken. I'm looking at the forward by the Minister. The aim of establishing the company's tribunal was to ensure that disputes relating to companies are resolved speedily and cost effectively. All right? We've already heard you're going to tell us if you do, you know, what model you could consider, that would still take that into account. Furthermore, to ensure that there is a move away from the formal court proceedings, you have referred to your alternative to slip resolution, but I thought I heard you saying that something about, because this is voluntary, people in a don't pitch, who doesn't pitch, you know, and are all ADRs voluntary? Because I'm looking, you said this was within the terms of legislation. And sometimes, yes, we slip up in legislation, so let's get an understanding of this. And then furthermore, the companies have said it arises mandate and it indicates the Companies Act. But if you could just clarify that for me, and also put in writing what you cannot complete here verbally, what did you mean when you spoke about these strategic relationships with the BBBE, which of course comes forward within our mandate here, but also you mentioned, I just have an O, was it the court? You did indicate you had a relationship accounting with a judge, president or something. Someone senior, it sounded like someone very senior when I heard you, but a relationship with accounting judiciary, is that correct? And if that is the case, how soon will it be when you're able to develop such relationships in other provinces? And finally, I see here in your outreach program that you took a flying call into Limpopo and then spent in counting a lot more time. You know, when I look at counting, I also constantly put a learning part of counting and the like. And you did tend to stay in the main cities. Now, to City of Swani, they used to tell me that that was a diplomatic city. One Limpopo, one Soweto, one Ekurhuleni. So you see there in Gauteng it's 2, 3, 4. And I know that more companies are there. I am aware of that. Perhaps you could just give us your reason, Derek, on focusing in these areas. Thank you very much. Now take it at your own pace, but if you don't complete, you can come back in writing and we will be asking the dear person to return to the committee. Perhaps you could accompany him then. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. With regards to the first question about the presentation, the comparison between the two, I think it's a matter of oversight. It's a matter of the way a particular institution wanted to present the information, but it does not necessarily mean that we did not take into account issues relating to NDP, issues relating to NCSF. For example, in the organization, in terms of building a capable state, that or institutions, that when we focus on issues of efficiency, is what we do in terms of building the organization, so that the organization is able to deliver on its mandate. We may not have overtly stated it like that, but we stated it in a different way. We take the point, and in the next presentation, we will make those kind of indications or alignment. Another indicator in terms of the NDP, our contribution to youth development, is that we've bought an internship program, and in terms of that internship program, we focus on engaging of getting on board unemployed youth that have no experience, and therefore make sure that we give them experience in the strategic areas such as research, SEM, that is supply chain management. So we do take this as part of our planning process and also as part of our implementation. As I indicated, it's just the way that we package the information, but the point is taken. We will do so in the future. In terms of the nature of cases, the transformation nature of cases that we handle at the company, whether people have come forward in terms of issues of fronting, not at this stage, not to my knowledge, or not at this stage. The kind of disputes that we've had are the issues around the non-payment, you know, of dividends. That's the kind of cases that we have seen. I'm not ruling out the possibility of us hearing those kind of cases in the future.
and we will welcome that. And to the extent that we are able to do so and refer some, because granting is a criminal offense in terms of the fact that it's a form of fraud, in terms of where we will assist to the extent that we are able to assist in terms of our legislation, but when it comes to the criminal nature of it, we will have to refer that to the court to deal with. In terms of the IP as a driver of performance, in many other organizations, it is an enabler in that when you have an efficient IT system, therefore you are able to handle much more cases, you are able to be more accessible to a number of people across the country. And therefore what we are in the process of doing, we've already gone through the process in a previous financial year and were unfortunately not to be able to get an appropriate service provider. We are continuing the process in this financial year, and therefore we are hoping that we will be able to appoint a service provider that will develop a system that would make sure that members are able to launch applications online, that they're able to communicate even through the cell phone itself. You're able to say to a member, this is the progress, to say to an applicant, this is the progress of your case. So we are cognizant of the fact that IT is important in terms of an enabler for you to drive performance in an organization. We take no chairperson of the need of our chairperson to be here to respond to them and to engage with the committee. We will convey the message. In terms of the number of tribunal members at the company, we've got 14 tribunal members and only one is full time. And the chairperson and the chairperson are part-time members. In terms of charging for fees, I will also leave it to the CFO to answer that. But the issue about they do not charge for travel time. What they do charge is for traveling. You know, traveling time is when the person is sitting on the car and say, I should have done the work and I haven't done it, so I need to be paid for that. We don't pay them for travel time. What we do pay is the kilometers that they have traveled to go to a particular place to do a case. For the kilometers that they have traveled, we do pay them. And what we also pay them, we pay them in terms of the rate that has been prescribed by the minister. In case of the chairperson, it's a 7,000 daily rate. In terms of the members, it's 5,000. And in terms of the DPC, chairperson is 6,000. Those are the rates as determined by the minister. We will indicate how we come to that in terms of the cases that they handle. It is for a number of cases in terms of the payment, we pay for the preparation of the cases, we pay for the delivery of the case, and we also pay for them when they sit for a hearing. So, for example, one case they get paid 15,000. That is how he's a member. He is the rate, and for one case they get paid 15,000.
The 15,000 for the case, yes, plus the 5,000, 1,000, or 7. That's just explain that, yes.
The rate that you use to calculate is the number, you will use 5,000. And for one case, because you pay for the research, for the preparation, and for the delivery of the case, you pay 15,000 for one case. Per member, if it is a member. And the ticket will be a chairperson, because his daily rate is determined by the minister, 7,000. Then you will pay 21,000 per case. That is how it works. And if it's the deputy, you will multiply the 6 by 3. And then if they have done traveling, you will then pay for the kilometers, which is the Department of Transport rate in terms of paying for the kilometers that they have traveled. And then in terms of performance bonuses, no staff member at the company tribunal has been paid a performance bonus. Members do not qualify because they are not employees of the company tribunal. So they are not eligible to receive performance bonuses. we will submit the remuneration policy, and Marshall indicates that we are in the process of reviewing the policy, as I've indicated, to make sure that the policy is aligned to the vision of saying we are a performance-driven organization, and therefore we need to, and also we are an organization that needs to retain itself, and therefore our policies must be reflective of that strategic intention. We have considered, in terms of charging for our services, we have considered charging for the services previously. The current Act does not allow for the charging of the service, and therefore the Act has to be amended in order to enable us to charge for services. And therefore, when we do the amendment, we will make sure that there is a balance between ensuring that the companies are being accessible to the members of the public and even to the indigent among our communities, but also we will make sure that we do charge services, especially with regards to applications for social and ethics committee and so forth. So there is an issue in the legislation, because in the previous Act, the Companies Act, when people were lodging the objections, there were fees that were charged, so it will not be such an over. It's just a matter of balance to make sure that we remain accessible to the people of South Africa. In terms of the areas that we have listed, in terms of impact, when we say Swan, the city of Swan, we go to those areas that are at the outset, that like we've gone to from Kostspruit, for again say it's not that we are in the city center. So the intention, because the majority of enterprises, the majority of potential entrepreneurs are within this metro. That is why the strategy tends to focus on those kind of areas, because that's where help will be needed most. I'm not aware of the provision you've indicated that the company tribunal can impose a fine of up to 10%. I'm not aware of that provision, and I will have to come to you in writing to indicate what would that basically be for. As I said, as a company tribunal, we do not charge for the services that we provide. A person in the proceedings can make an application for an order to host if they had brought in a legal representative and so on. Then the members who's presiding over the case can consider whether or not there is a just case to be made for awarding of those costs. But we do not charge fines. In terms of the voluntary, where people do not pitch, for example, there was an instance where there was an applicant who has lodged a case with us, and the respondent was one of the big companies in the country. So sometimes the big company knows that it can go through a litigation process very quite easy, and therefore they don't feel obliged, because the Act does not necessarily oblige them to engage in ADR. So they did not pitch. We try in as much as possible to bring them to the party, but it's within their rights to say no. And it's that gap that we'd like to attend to, because there are models where you can make ADR a compulsion and still allow the party. It's not being successful, you know. They're coming to the tribunal being made of obligation or compulsory. But if the resolution of the issue fails, then allow the parties to either proceed to arbitration or to proceed to the court. So that is something that we need to consider. In terms of the strategic relationship with the BEE and the BBBE Commission and the judge in helping us, we have been engaging with both the judge in the judge president in the Gauteng in the Gauteng division of the High Court, and also with the BBEE Commission. And the intention there is that also the courts are moving into a court annex mediation process to make sure that where there is capacity challenges from their side, they can refer those cases to the company's tribunal, and therefore we are able to deal with issues of mediation consideration, because we believe that the company's tribunal has the correct expertise or skills. And also in terms of the BEE, as I've indicated, there might be issues of shareholding. People do not understand where should they be paid, if they're not, why are they not paying, being paid dividends, and so on, in terms of also the shareholding agreements. You know, there can be disputes that arise from those, and therefore we will be able to assist. Chairperson, I think those are the questions that we posed. Thank you so much.
Very much. We do have just a follow-up question from Honourable Hill Lewis. Didn't you have your hand up? No, right?
That's all.
In that case, I'm conscious of our time. I'm sure it's about 15 minutes. Having looked at the handout that we got from you, the actual overhead, I'd like at least the CFO, is that right? To take us through in the next 10 minutes, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. I will briefly take you through the budget forecast over the MTF plot. On the current slide that we've got, like Ms. Masalmiani has presented, we only have two programs, which is the adjudication and administration. The administration carries about 80% of the budget, and the adjudication is about 20%. And the main reason for that is that within the adjudication is basically the payment of tribunal members' fees. And a huge percentage of administration goes into compensation of employees. And on the next slide, on the revenue part, our main source of funding is the grant allocation from the DTI, which in the year 2016-17 is about 15 million, and 2017-18 is 15.8 million, and 18-19 is 16 million. So if you look at the increase, it's way below inflation, hence we talk about the issue of financial constraints. And when we look at the interest received, we are also anticipating a decline. We have been receiving a substantial interest due to the savings on the surplus that we approved for retention over the years. And over the MTF period, we will be utilizing the funds that the Treasury has approved. Basically, what Mrs. Masalwanyane has mentioned regarding our advocacy services, we can only fund those from our surplus fund. And on the expenditure, I've already alluded to the fact that our main expenditure is members' fees, compensation of employees, and our goods and services is our operational and administrative expenditure, which also we anticipate a decline because we are funding this mainly from our surplus funds. As we utilize the funds, we will not have a lot to fund for our administrative and operational expenditure. Hence, there will be a decline. And we have applied to the DDI to have our baseline increased, because over the MTF, through our focus, we will be utilizing our surplus funds. That is not until going forward. There is a need to increase the baseline. And Ms. Masalwanyane has spoken about the issue of us raising our own fees. That is basically based on the legislation. It's not something that we anticipate to be a mechanism that we can rely on, something that will take some time to materialize. And that's basically from the finance side. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your patience. I think we have members. Do you have any comments or questions specifically on what we've just heard? Looking at our members there, and I think we tackled some of the issues already. As you know, it's across over these things. I never concrete walls, as it were. And I think the information that you will then share with us, because we must get this very clear. To me, it still sounds like if I am a member, I will get funds or remuneration or fee for the case. I will get that. Then I happen to be an X type of member and I'll get 5,000 a day for attending the meeting, in which that may have been discussed. So I may attend two meetings. That will be 10,000 plus 15.
15 hours on a case, isn't that it? You see, so I'm going to get paid for case anyway, whether I go to that meeting or not. Maybe do you do all your case work in a meeting? You need to explain that.
Thank you, sure, let me explain and I'll hand over to the CFO. There is a meeting, just a meeting of tribunal. If they attend the meeting, they will get the rate as you indicated. If it is a member, he gets an ordinary. Let me say, an ordinary member is 5,000. If that is a deputy chairperson, it's 6,000. The chairperson is 7,000. When they do a case, they don't have to be in a meeting. They do the case based on the papers before them. Per case, it is, we pay them for the preparation, for the research and then for the decision they have issued. So which basically is three. So you take the rate and multiply by three. So if it is an ordinary member, it's 5 times 3, it's 15 per case. And if it is a deputy, it will be 6,000 times 3, it will be 18,000. And then the chairperson, it will be 7,000 times 3, which is 21,000. But if that case, it's not the one that's handled on paper, they even have to go into a hearing. Then you have to pay them for each day that they set for a hearing. And then pay them their rate, a day rate for writing of their decision. And also pay them for the preparation. So I think what we will do is, in order to make it simple for members to understand, we will submit in writing. For members to say this is how the policy operates.
Yes. That will be very helpful to us to get a clear understanding. I mean, secondly, the actual travelling fee, you mentioned the policy it's based on. I'm not sure we all have a copy of the Minister's handbook about how much it's being charged or what the Minister says.
Sure.
Do we need that as well? I heard that, and that's why I asked you if you wanted to follow up. And the other issue that we want after that is model that you perhaps have been considering, that we're asking you to consider a funded model. All right. Yes, Honourable Hilders?
It's not a question, it's just a comment. Last year when we had a special hearing on the company's tribunal, we were told then already that the remuneration policy was under review. So that's a review that seems to be taking very, very long. So it would be interesting to get the timeline of when this review is actually going to be finished and then get the final documents. Because last year there were some pretty outrageous plans that would be justified under the policy.
We need to make a distinction between two things. One is the remuneration policy I was referring to is for staff that deals with issues of performance and salaries and so on. And then there's the claims, the members' fees and allowance policy. So we'll submit that one, the members' claims and allowance
policy. Look, members, there was an issue about a fine, the possibility of a fine. Now, we heard that this will be looked into, but what we also want to point out to the company's tribunal is that in the legislation here, it talks about admin fines. I think section 175 per se. And it talks about a court on application by a commission or panel may impose it. I think if that could be looked into, as you indicated you will do, and come back to us on these matters, because I think that those issues will become increasingly important as we close gaps. Yes, Ms. Holt?
Thank you, Jane. I also want to indicate that I think the Minister in his annual strategic sessions with the Companies Tribunal has also asked them to look at some income-generating strategies. And so that piece of work, as I understand it, is currently being done.
Some of these questions, as I'm sure you appreciate, need to be in our Thursday. Those are the ones relating specifically to budget. Then there are other questions concerning cases, etc., which, if I'm correct, we have already got some dates, but if that does not suit the date, it does have this very clear as to what date suits him. We're trying to meet him halfway, and we must have him here. All right, so let's clear that one. Is this closing the meeting now because your hand was not up, Honourable MacPherson, and I am closing the meeting.
I was waiting for you to come to close the meeting because, Chair, I want to table before the committee and yourself the actual Constitutional Court judgment. And I think it would be very important for us as a committee to reflect on what that judgment means for us as legislators in holding the executive to account. So I have 10 copies here that are available, and then members can read through it and we can have a discussion. I'd like us to formally do that.
Actually, you were not here at the beginning. Why don't you discuss this with your colleague? Honourable MacPherson, I do not want to enter into a dialogue. All right. So you may take it up tomorrow.
Well, it's on the record, so it's table.
So, members, we're going to adjourn this meeting until 9 o'clock tomorrow in the old assembly chamber. Colloquium begins. Thank you. 9 o'clock till 1600. Thank you.